I am all for like repurposing all previous TikToks onto shorts if I'm starting an account. And then what I'll do is like start reworking like the best TikTok videos with like different hooks that might be more like how someone would search on YouTube now, like how to blank. All my captions are like very SEO. All my hooks are very SEO. Like it's how to make blank, how to do blah, blah, blah.
So, all right, I'm going to come at you hot with a really difficult first question.
How are we?
Sparkling water or regular?
Okay, I have Poland Spring right now because that's what we just ordered for sushi.
Okay.
I'm going to
What
say it
are
depends on the day. Depends on the day.
What's your like beverage of choice? Because I always see you have like the best snacks and best beverages. So, give me like best beverage and like favorite snack right now.
Cream olipop, cream soda olipop,
That's your
beverage.
favorite olipop.
That's my favorite olipop. Because
Oh,
Eli judging
hot
me.
take.
Yeah, Eli
Hot
hates
take.
me. Eli sweat. I love the strawberry vanilla too. I know he likes that.
You know
I
what? I
am
kind of hate
low
you.
tier. I think both
Why?
of those are B tier.
Why? Why?
So,
Why?
Cody, if you ever, I mean, anyone
Oh,
that
wait,
follows
Dr.
Kendall,
Brown's? Is it because of Dr. Brown's?
no, if
Or
you
no?
follow Kendall on social, you'll see her cart and it's full of a lot of cans of soda, but it's not only Olipop. There are some competitors in there as well.
Poppy.
Maybe.
Pleading the fifth. I'm
Okay.
pleading the fifth.
I will say I had a Poppy last week. Not bad, but not as good.
It's not
They
the
say
same.
variety. They say variety is the spice of life. All right.
Okay.
So,
This is not
sorry.
what they
What about
say,
snack?
but
What's your favorite snack at the moment?
Oh man. Oh my gosh. I don't even know if it's really a branded snack per se. Honestly, I've been craving like peanut butter and jelly lately. But
Oh.
I'd actually say a Trader Joe's snack is currently my go-to. It is the Go Bananas, the chocolate covered bananas,
That sounds
the
fucking
frozen
delicious.
ones. They're so good. So I would say that's my combo. If we're talking still water, Essentia. If we're talking sparkling, usually, honestly, the Trader Joe's cans are pretty good. Some of their flavors are good.
Season 3 of Down to Chat is brought to you by TapCart. I know we chatted about this last season, but there are so many cool brands that have created an app with TapCart in the last couple of years, and I wanted to highlight one of the ones that I've been looking at. So Chubbies. Chubbies has been around for a minute. They're in the men's fashion space. I think what's interesting about Chubbies is they kicked this off in 2018. At this point, they have 137,000 push subscribers, which is kind of crazy. It's like these people are all getting notifications every time they send something in app, which is super cool. The return on app spend, which TapCart calls ROAS, not the ROAS you know, but a different ROAS, is 189x, which is pretty insane. I think the unique thing about Chubbies is that they're looking at this as a unique way to kind of re reach this top 10 to 30% of customers with deals, drops, brand news, all that fun stuff. I think when you sprinkle in some app exclusives in your strategy, it's really helpful for retention. So I think it's a fun thing to check out. If you're looking to learn more about TapCart, you can check out tapcart.com/downtochat and you'll get your first 2 months free. One of our listeners actually called Caden Lane. Brian from Caden Lane launched with TapCart a couple of weeks ago and just showed me his app on Twitter the other day and I was blown away. It's pretty insane how quick they've built it, but also how thorough and amazing it is. So definitely check out TapCart and thanks for listening.
All right, now
Okay.
that we got the hard question out of the way, ready to get into it?
And then
Excited
question.
to learn from you. Like Eli said, we're kind of sick of talking about retention and email and Facebook ads for an episode. So figured we bring on a social and influencer expert. So I know one thing we were chatting about right before the show was influencer and then just some of kind of the misconceptions that you're seeing with like brands that you're talking to. What are you seeing? I'm no influencer expert, but I always like learning as much as I can. Like, what are some of the misconceptions that you're seeing? And I guess get into like how you think brands should be approaching influencer right now.
I think number one, I think it's just still like the misconception even around like the lowest lift options to work with creators. I think everyone's like, we gotta pay for the placement, gotta throw a budget at it. Okay, so that only breeds like really inauthentic, like one-off partnerships unless they're thinking more long term. Like for instance, I was talking with Alex from Zesty's Zesty's like the other day, and we were just like, how do we handle seeding, right? And how do we like think about this as a whole? My number one question to like any brand when I start on an influencer scope where I'm like running it all, like from getting it into their hands, sourcing everything, is how much product can you give me? I think that's where it starts, is like brands come to me or anyone who does this and they're like, we want to be everywhere. You can only be everywhere if you give someone everything that they see. So if you're coming to me and that's they're fair. Like, we can only see like 10 packages a month. I can't get you everywhere. I could get you in cool hands, but you won't be everywhere. So I think one, it's like goes back to like their own inventory and like aligning their goal with the needs internally. So it's like making sure that your allotments can actually allow someone to like succeed in that role or that position, or if they're consulting or not. That's number one. Number two, back to like the relationship building side of paying to play versus just seeding. I think everyone's like, cool, everyone gets so many packages. Like they kind of put the words in the influencer's mouth before they even did anything. And so they write it off. So that's my number two, is like.
So I didn't even know that. So people think that seeding doesn't work or it's kind of not what's up, and then they'll go straight to paying.
It's mostly with brands that either have like more expensive products, which I understand, because it's like, we're giving them so much, like, how do we not know what we're getting out of this yet? But I think that's the beauty of it, too. It's like, it's so fun when you write special guests in the background, everyone. When you ride the high, though, of someone that you send to and you don't know what they're going to do and they do the best thing possible, that's the best feeling in the world. Like, I think also it's part of it. Yeah, it's like the empty promise, I guess, of like, cool, we're going to send, but like, we don't know if we're getting an in-feed post or a reel or a TikTok or anything like that. And so they want the security. But like, you can't build security with someone like that until you seed to them and make sure they like the product. So what are you going to pay them for like an inauthentic review of the product instead, just so you get the placement? Like, I'd rather seed 100 packages and have 50 people post it and you close your eyes at night knowing that you had a 50% hit rate, and that's pretty solid. Like, so yeah, like people still think that like seeding doesn't work because they're in such like demand of UGC. But I think then that also bridges to like employee, EGC is a thing. Like having employees generate content to make it UGC is a thing that you can still do. Like there's other levers to pull versus just saying like influencers the problem for this, or like we need to do this. Like there's other levers that you can pull to make sure you still get what you need on the content side. So
do you think we'll ever move beyond calling it UGC? Because it's like, it's so far from user-generated content at this point. Like, yeah. I know there's EGC. I mean, for us, we use a lot of UGC, but none of it is by a customer. I mean, maybe some of them start as customers, but they're really all creators. And
yeah,
it's pretty much all paid. Some of it is not, but most of the content is. Yeah, money is changing hands for it.
Yeah. I do think that it's going to change, or like some new terminology is going to kind of come into the mix across like how we kind of spoke before too. Like, yeah, like user generated, like true UGC, like this is just like full blown customer who just happens to be really creatively inclined and knows how to make a really good video. It's like perfection versus the EGC side and like any internal dev.
I have an idea for it.
And then
I have an idea for what we can call it.
What is it?
Content. Just content.
There you go.
This is not a bad idea. Yeah. This is one of Cody's better ideas.
Drop the mic.
Exactly.
Wait, Kendall.
Drop the user generated. It's just cooler.
Which brands are doing EGC, employee generated content? Which brands are doing that really well?
I would say, oh, damn.
It's probably more like a TikTok thing, right?
Yeah, it's more TikTok focused. Yeah, that's what I was about to say. Like, when I think about brands on Instagram, nothing really comes across to me as much, because obviously they don't like highlight it that it's them. But when I think about it, it's definitely more TikTok focused, right? Like, it's like the behind the scenes. It's like dough, like in the factory. Mm-hmm. It's like capturing.
We
those
have moments. A full time content creator, like videographer and editor. And a lot of our ASMR and product type stuff, it's all been there. We're like building an internal studio, but it's all shot there because it's like you end up spending so much time, but also money, like getting this content. Like at a certain point, it almost makes sense to just have a full time person doing it. Do you see that at all? Do you see any brands that you work with that have like a full time creator?
It's becoming the norm. So, like, example, like, NBA now has, like, a full-time TikTok person. She's awesome. Her name's Emily. I spoke to her last week. And, yeah, I think that's something that's, like, a huge lever that people should be pulling more. And I'm trying to get people to, like, go down that rabbit hole of, like, this is an investment you're going to keep making year over year. And, like, you could just save yourself a lot of money, number one. And, like, have someone who you know is there for, like, the long haul. And you don't need to, like, rely on 15 different people to do, what, like, one video. So I know Emmy did. And, like, yeah, a lot of brands are, like, working to hire these creators. They're killing me in the background. The love you, Nick. But anyway, sorry. So I would say that. And then also with the idea of, secrets here, but like this is something that Graza wants to do too. Like I was like, hey, like we need a creator, right? Because like we work a lot with creators in general, but I'm like, we want to do all these recipes, you want to do all these cool videos, but we can't, because like we can't, one, rely on like different people to assume that we know how we want it filmed, and that's too much to ask, and those scopes creep up so fast, versus just like, hey Johnny, like, can you make this video for us? Like, easy peasy. And my final point.
I totally, it's so much easier having them.
Yeah.
And you, they already know your style and how you like things cut or shot.
Yeah. And then my final point to that, too, is like, I think finding a way to like have the UGC, EGC moment of like, if you're have a food or bev product, it's like, why don't you have like a little party with it? Have a cocktail party, pour drinks, have someone shooting content the whole time. Like, create it yourself so that, like, when you launch, especially, too, you already have it. Like, I think that's the thing. Yeah, it's always just, like, we need more.
Makes sense.
You just need proof. And then it's, like, becomes this everyone run to the finish line in, like, a week and, like, see what you get. And, like, hope for the best.
So brands that don't have internal creators, like, let's say Graza Now, and probably the majority of the brand, and I know that I see you tweet about this a lot. I think most people in social do. It's how like social people are expected to kind of do everything from shoot and edit and produce and everything. Like, what's kind of, I guess, like the workflow like for a brand that doesn't have a creator? Is social shooting any of the stuff? Are you working with, you know, freelancers? Are you working with, again, influencers for content? Like, is it a mixed bag? Like, just what? Yeah, what's that look like?
Yeah, I would say for like very, it's taken a lot of work to get it to a system that is functional and doesn't break a lot because you're relying on so many other people. So yeah, the usual workflow, an example would be like, how does Graza go from start to finish of a recipe video, for example? It's like, obviously we have all our main marketing goals for the month and what we know we want to talk about from a recipe perspective and food perspective. For example, like, we're focusing on like Italian food in March. And we'll have a brainstorm. What recipes do we want? Okay, done. And then my goal is like, who do I know in my network or the Graza network of who we seed it to, who would be like the perfect fit for these recipes that we want to make? I reach out to them. Hey, here's the scope I want, which checks us off with like, you know, a video. So we have short form content that we always need. We have a hero image so that we always have everything that we need for email or blog. And then like the recipe for the blog. And then so that we could turn it on social too and like get everything that you need. And then basically take that, distribute it once it's in, and like call it a day. And we put them up against a deadline based on our editorial calendar and on payout. And that's it. Like, but that's, you know, there's not a whole lot that we do there. Like, budget's like pretty low because like we don't need that much. But that's usually like the flow for something, whether it's a skincare product or not too. It's like I'm always briefing them to get what we want, and we know what works because like I'll look at the data like I did yesterday at the end of the month, being like, hey, when we do this type of video with like this type of folk from the creator, this is outperforming, we need more of this. Or like, hey, we should simplify what we're having them do because we're realizing like these really simple videos are outperforming the more like elevated type of dishes per se. Yeah, so that's like the usual workflow. I just control the briefing.
Yeah, that makes sense. And it's very similar to what we do for social. It's
yeah.
Crazy though how much content you need though.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing too, where you know, outside of the video briefs. Otherwise, it's just me, usually me and a designer on the team, and then any of the photo video assets that like a brand keeps shooting internally. But yeah, I mean, for the amount of content that you need from a social standpoint, especially to like vary it by platform, I think at the same time, though, there's a lot of brands who also are still able to work with what they got and make it work per platform, even if we know like TikTok to Reels or TikTok to Shorts is like a different format per se. Like, how can you still have fun with it and like make the hook work for the platform versus like literally filming a whole completely different video and like wasting more energy when like you could just be getting ahead on like the strategic side and like how to keep getting that content, but like rework everything that you currently have in the system.
Kendall, yeah, it's so interesting hearing, like, you know, I see what we do at Jones and it's like a massive operation, and then, you know, I think people think that Graza is like a 40 person team when in reality it's really not. I think it would probably be really helpful to start the other way and talk about like if somebody's starting a business tomorrow, they're a solo entrepreneur, they want to do this, like what's the leanest, easiest, meanest way to do this without a huge team and without spending a ton of money? Like you need content, you need the stuff, you need the seeding. Like if somebody wants to do this tomorrow, they have a $2,000 budget. Can you do anything with that? Or a $400 budget? Like what do you do when you have not much?
So context for anyone listening to this, the way that I've always operated is that I have $0 when I start and like for as long as possible. Like I always go in with like, I'm someone who will always underspend budget because I'm pretty good at negotiating. I won't lie, but yeah, like I remember the first friend client I ever started on. They were like, you have $0. Like just see it. We have product, but we can't pay for anything. So like, shot in the dark, like just keep seeding it out, and it worked, you know. So that's how I've always taken that, because that's what I started with, was like I will always have $0, but I will always have product. So I would say that's if we're not looking at that 2K budget, also relating back to product inventory, I would say seeding is the lowest lift thing that you can do, and making sure that you have enough to support that. And not being afraid to get it out into the world, because like the best things can happen by accident with you doing that. Like example would be like me seeding to, for those who know, like Molly Baz from like Ex Bon Appetit, huge chef that people look up to, randomly DM'd her on Christmas Eve and was like, yo, can I send you oil? She said yes, and I was like, cool. I didn't expect her to post it, honestly, because she's huge. She posted it the day of launch, and we were already sold out by that point. And I was like, oh my God, this is the best thing ever. So there's like beauty in the unknown. I would say that's step number one. Number two for content is if you have $2,000, I would say that similar process of like taking whatever product that you do and putting it in the respective environment that it lives in, and like getting friends and doing like a shoot internally, like a UGC shoot. That's where I would start.
Yeah, I think, yeah, if you have more time, more money, you just launch it, that probably makes a ton of sense. So seeding is obviously the foundation, I think. Anyone I've talked to, at least, and that's obviously for us, it's like foundation, pit, and funzer. But once you start some, you know, building a relationship and somebody's liking the product, you know, are you continuing to, like, what do you do from there? What can somebody, if they get a partner who, you know, is loving products, like, obviously, most people know the HexClan story, so, like, you know, Gordon Ramsay just naturally followed them, and now he's an investor in the face. Like, did you do anything with Molly Baz that you're allowed to share, like to amplify that partnership? Like I see Graza still in the back of some of her videos.
Yeah. So from what I can share, we actually didn't. We just stayed really close with her, and we would send her oil. Like what I like to do, if I see that someone's actively, and this goes for like any product, not just Graza, it's obviously like Graza has been like the biggest learning experience of my life, and like also a good culmination of the things that I've learned to start so far in advance, I think was the biggest thing here. Like that's actually something, if anyone's listening to this and is about to start a company, or they want to start, or they're about to launch, start your social sooner rather than later, in every aspect, seeding, everything like that. I would say, yeah, so from what I can share, like, we would just put anyone, so whether it's, like, for Canopy, it's on filters or whatever, it's, like, hooking them up with a subscription, just because, one, it makes it easier internally because you don't have to keep inputting an address.
Yeah.
and making sure they stay stocked with what they love. So yeah, that's like the extent of like usually how that goes, but like with maybe smaller.
Just make sure they're stocked all the time.
Yeah, because they keep using it, right? And I think also there's this whole notion that I might bring up at, based on one of the questions, but I'm also like such an advocate of products similar to Jones too, for in a different niche, is like these, like how I describe it, vehicular products, like the products that can like be used multiple times in different formats, in my opinion, get the most UGC output because they allow you to have like so many different experiences or be used for different things in your life. Like olive oil, cook it, people are putting it in their drinks, people use it for skincare, they use it every day because they have enough servings of it. Jones Road, they use it every day. They're going out, they're just getting ready for work, like they want to show it off. You think like pancake mix companies too, right? Like there are accounts that just make pancakes. They use the same mix. They might use Birch Benders. They might be sponsored by Kodiak Cakes, but they can come up with 150 different pancake recipes. Where like these bev, that's why like to me, like beverage is really hard. You're seeding someone a 6-pack or a 12-pack. And like if they drink it all by accident and they forgot to post it, that like blows.
Yeah, there's only so many things you can do or say about it.
Yeah.
No, I love that. I love that. So I mean, that's super actionable and obviously really, really easy. When it comes to then kind of next step, right? Like a lot of people would be like, okay, let's pay this. Do you recommend it across other brands? Like, let's say you are seeding and building a relationship. Is there value in actually, you know, paying people to post a reel or whatever platform it is?
It's a good question. It's a heated question. Okay, so I have two takes. Also, I have to include the context of my food account here before I talk about paying creators, because I have a creator background. So I had been the creator who's gotten paid before, which I like to think is also an edge because it helps me level head with creators. So I am like always in their shoes. So I also have the pulse on like what usual fee should be for like the scopes that I'm asking for, and also like where I can like give and take on scope asks effectively to still get what the brand also needs, and it just works out really well. I am for paying creators, but I think it's a no-brainer, but it obviously depends on what you're paying them for. I think like this, the one-offs is like, we just need like a big hit. So like, we just need someone big to post, like pay them, like whatever they ask, like go for it. It's never gonna work. That's why if I pay anyone for anything, it's because they're already really warm. Like they've been using the product.
Yeah.
They keep posting it organically. It makes sense to pay. Bonus points if you have like an ambassador or affiliate set up with them and you know that they're already bringing in traffic. Of course, I'm probably going to pay you if you're able to already prove that you're bringing in like $25,000 in sales, and I might pay you if you asked me for $2,500. Like, yeah, that makes sense to me. So I think it has a time and a place with like where you want to build it in. I think not a lot of brands these days are paying up front, but I think because they feel like it's so congested of a space, that's where they need to go. I would really say, like, if you're still just starting out, I would be paying creators to create the internal content for you.
Yeah, so you see more value in paying content creators rather than paying people for their earned media.
For their reach, yeah. So, like,
that's
or
right.
You can also, like, argue the side of, like, something I do with some scopes openly is, like, I like to ask for like obviously the content on the brand side, but hey, it's like if I do want your reach, like let's do a collaborative post then, because then I get
that was gonna be one of my questions. So
yeah,
something we're kind of testing, like, so just for context, we pay more money out per month to creators. Like a lot of our social content, right, like is paid up, so we do a lot in-house as well, but there's more of that. But a lot of, so I would say some of the people that we work with don't have an audience, they're just purely creator that we're looking for content. But I would say there's a good amount of them who they do have an audience and they have a significant following, so they're influencer and creator. And so we're about to start kind of like going to them, or we have started going to them, but we're about to start testing, you know, some collab posts, because I've seen obviously a lot of brands do them. Are you finding more reach on that type of stuff, or reaching a different audience?
The hard call on reach on a different audience, I wish there was a better attribution point for them, but I'm sure that will come over time. or it's just like not a strong, I guess it's like the only really way to see is like if your backend analytics skew, but you would have to do so many collaborative posts with them consistently and like remove any of the other ones. So I personally see like a really good response.
Nice.
Well, like 99% of the time, I think there's somewhere it's like, this is going to do really well. And then it doesn't do as well. It doesn't not do well, but you're just like, okay, wait, that should have, like, if they have 250,000 followers, like, should have done well. And like, we know their average baseline. I've had a few flops, but like, I don't write off the person because it could, there's so many factors. It could have been like, maybe the hook wasn't strong enough. And like, how can we refine that or work on that? Or like, maybe, an example, recipe was like too detailed and like maybe too hard for like the normal person.
Yeah.
And so they were turned off by it. But yeah, other than that, like that's how I would build it in so that like I could still get the reach versus being like, we'll post it and you post it separately. I'm like, I'll just make your life so much easier. I'll send you the request. Because what I've seen too, fun fact, if you have some creators, if you want them to upload it and invite you as the collaborator, the fee goes up.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. I think No, I think now that I realized it, we actually had like one of our first ones go up today. But so excited to see how that does. But yeah, I think we post everything and then obviously, you know, give them the request. Okay, cool. Yeah, and I mean, that's what I thought. It made sense. I just was cool to hear. And then question for you. So obviously there's it's a kind of hot you know, topic, but Reels, TikToks, YouTube Shorts. I want your take on it. I guess let's start with TikTok. Like, where do you think TikTok is currently at? What's your opinion on TikTok? How much should a brand, has it peaked? How much should a brand be investing in TikTok versus other platforms right now?
I was thinking about this a lot last week because I think it's, maybe I'm just speaking from myself out here. So if anyone is listening to this and they've seen the same, please like message me or something. There's definitely a dip. That's for sure. I'm seeing that firsthand. It's very rare that I was handling TikTok accounts for clients, to be completely honest, because of the time. And because a lot of them like didn't have the resources or want to invest yet in video content from what the needs would be, because it's expensive if you don't have enough resources internally, obviously. So I also felt like I had the imposter syndrome when it first launched. I was like, ah, gosh, I was like, I don't want to be faced for seven faces of brands. Like, that's so weird. Yeah, so Graza was truthfully like the first one I said, I'll run their TikTok because this can be so fun. and we've had some videos do extremely well. But at the same time, yeah, over the last few weeks, I think like it, I can't say it peaked, but I can say it's, I would say right now it's like an iffy, like, is this, like I'm not against pulling on the cadence, if you know what I mean, pulling it back.
Okay.
Yeah.
It seems like views are really down. And
I look at
ours, okay, Bobby's. And then I look at a lot of like creators, like not even in, you know, DC, but like Andrew Schultz or something like that, like comedians and like, you know, other people like that. And like, A, it seems like they're posting way less, but also I'll go and look at Reels and they're, and again, I know these are people with large followings, but like they're getting so many more views on Reels than they are in their TikToks. And
that's the thing. It's like, I think there's still like levers to pull on TikTok too, with like testing to see like how you can make the original video perform better. Like, example, I love reply videos. Reply videos almost, in my opinion,
crush.
Oh, yeah. So like for me, I'm like, okay, cool. If like I already know that all the reply videos I've ever done have worked extremely well, why don't I just like make a huge ass series of reply videos and break down the website of the brand that we're working on? And like, example of EGC is, hey, everyone on the team, insert blank, can you please go comment on the videos with these questions? So that
we spent
six
figures on an ad one time, and it literally, the question was for me.
See? Influencer. Like, but that's the thing. That's like, if we know that reply videos are really good lever to pull to like help views get back up, then like, yeah, I'm gonna make a series of reply videos. Like, and I'm gonna do it literally from scratch with all the questions and make sure that like it hits on like the common, and the frequently asked questions too that we already get from customers. And then bring that also over to Reels because like still applies and it makes it easier because it's already there. And yeah, so I'm like, iffy. I'm very much like, it's definitely harder right now. I also feel like
should brands be investing as much in it? Like, if I'm a brand, I'm trying to figure out, you know, how I'm going to allocate dollars, you know, should a brand, because I feel like the reason I'm asking, I feel like a year ago, everybody was, if you're not making TikToks, you're not doing anything. Like, you have to be making TikToks. You have to be focused on that. It can change your business.
I think it's still worth investing in, just not on the same level from a year ago. Like, I still don't think it hurts to like get 3 videos up a week. I think like all the hoo-ha of like, you got to be uploading all the gurus, you know, like 3 times a day, 15 times a week, like whatever. Case in point, any social platform, if a brand cannot sustain that or anything like that, you will never sustain it. If you can't sustain 4 posts a week on any platform, that's not your number then for right now. If you can sustain 3, I'd rather a brand do 3 posts a week for 6 months versus trying to be like, we need 7 posts and you last like 2 months. And then it's like dead game of content. You're like, great.
Down to Chat is brought to you by PostScript. In my opinion, PostScript is the SMS platform built for Shopify brands. To be totally transparent, we just switched at Jones Road to PostScript, and it is the best decision we've ever made. We were on a competitor before, and they started tacking on all types of fees. The platform was not being improved at all. It was just getting really expensive, and the service we were getting was just nothing compared to what we've received from PostScript since being with them. The product with PostScript is just hands down the best that I've ever used. To me, it has the best integrations for Shopify stores of all sizes. It's got the best feature set. The segmentation is the easiest and most powerful. The pop-ups are great. But really, the thing that I love is I've never experienced such great service from a software provider. The only time I heard from our previous provider was around contract renewal time. But with PostScript, they've gone out of their way above and beyond to make our program uber successful. And it's really evident that they care about us getting as much value out of our program as possible. So in my opinion, with PostScript, you get the best product on the market, you get it at the best price, and you get it with the best service. There's a reason why the fastest growing Shopify brands like Dr. Squatch, Native, Olipop, Feastables, and now Jones Road Beauty are all using PostScript for their SMS program. Sign up for PostScript today to take your SMS program to new heights.
What's your take on this? I personally don't feel like Instagram's getting enough credit for what they've done to Reels. I actually think they've done a great job. And I think it was funny, this is my interpretation, is that when Adam, you know, the head of Instagram came out, was like, oh, we're essentially going to turn into TikTok. And everyone was like, fuck that, we hate it. And so he was like, okay, we're not going to do that, we hear you. But I still feel like they went ahead and did it. Like, they did way more suggested posts, way more video. What's your take on Reels right now?
So have you guys seen, I'm going to hit you back with a question first, is have you seen a dip in your Reels lately or no?
Recently, yes. Yes, okay. Recently. So, I was going to ask you about that. Had you have, I'm assuming?
So,
why do you think?
Because of his announcement being like, I really want to beat this man one day, I swear to God. I just want to be like, Adam, like, what are we doing here, man? Like, first, it's like, okay, we want to be like TikTok. Cool. Like, it worked. Nice. It's fun. But now you're like, okay, just kidding. Like, we are a photo platform at the end of the day. Like, we should probably go back to our roots. And now you have all these brands and all these creators who, one, have gained a lot of what they have because of you through the video side. And then, two, the brand side, it's like all this money that we've all spent to make sure that we were doing this. And now everyone who's spent budgets for the last like X amount of months for like 6 months now of content that we don't know is going to get seen as much anymore. Like,
why do you think they did it? Why didn't they went back to photo?
I don't know. I was thinking about this.
Yeah, I have an opinion.
So backwards to me though, because if you think about it, like what I found really interesting is that when all the more carousel trends started on TikTok, like exactly. It was it's like ass backwards. It's literally all the carousel posts are working on TikTok. And then they're like, okay, dope. That's working. And then it was like video working for Instagram. And now like they're trying to go back to their roots. And I'm just like, what's happening? I mean, I won't lie. I had like 3 videos do extremely well. I got bored during Christmas break. And I was like, I'm going to make TikToks and try and revive myself. And I made carousel TikToks. I'm like, one got like 53K, one got like 22,000. And I'm like, this is so easy. I could be a TikToker. Like, I don't know, but I'm interested to like hear your opinion.
I think it's not. I think because so from what I've heard and see, we started because I saw people talking about it, doing carousels again, and I think last week the carousel was actually one of our top posts. I think it's just this like your margin is my opportunity game where it's like, oh, you know, I'm Instagram, I want to be TikTok. So their videos, well, I'm going to make sure your videos get more views here than there. So you're going to come here. And then it's like, that was Instagram trying to beat TikTok. And now TikTok is trying to beat Instagram with the carousels, with static, right? They're trying to be like, oh, well, like, I guess it's no longer just a competitive advantage to just have short form videos because anyone can do that. So let's also do carousels and kind of take a page out of their book. So Instagram's like, no, like, I'm just kind of, I already have the attention for photos. Let me just boost the reach to those again.
Yeah. And that's why carousels, right, on Instagram are doing well again, which I love. Love a good photo down. But like,
do you see, I was all for like all reels, all video.
I love all the reels, all video because it's what I pay people for. But it's also like, I don't know. I love a good, like, I do that for clients all the time because there's like a good, easy, low lift content opportunity for distribution. Like whether it's like tweet carousels, so like so easy and like get shares all day. Like if I like upload a tweet around like why people love olive oil or like funny shit like that, easy.
I think at its core, it's a fight for daily active users. I think that they're just kind of continuing to fight back and forth to try to get people to spend more time on the app. And the more time you spend on the app, the more they get money from advertisers. And I think it's like, it's just going to, I mean, in my opinion, at least, it'll be just a downward spiral. It'll just be like, how can we make this app even more fucking insane so that people can't get off of it? And I think TikTok, people were just getting somewhat bored of endless scrolling. So they just continue to throw in a loop. There was the Be Real moment that everyone had. So TikTok was like, fuck it, we're doing it. And then, you know, everyone
people
takes
still
the shit
do
on
it. They still do it. Know. People are using
it. They do.
It.
I've never.
You know,
but now they have like the HQ, like the H, what was it? HQ?
Trivia, right?
Yeah, the trivia game. No one wants to play your trivia game.
But I know, I'm like, Kendall, get out of here. Just keep like, testing. Close. Like they'll just keep testing and testing and testing and being really annoying about it.
ABC, always be testing.
So, and what about shorts? I mean, I totally agree with you, Eli. Yeah, but totally. I think that's why, like, I'm not that bullish on TikTok because it's like, it seems like they're trying to find these other features, but they can kind of be, you know, the magic they had has kind of been competed away at least a little bit.
Everyone's turning it, like, those two are just turning into one another in different ways and different dates by different dates, right? So, I still remember when Stories came out and I was like, what's this Snapchat shit?
Oh my god! I remember the funniest shit. I remember everyone would joke, and then it's like Microsoft Excel added stories. Never see like those.
like everyone. Like I just all in it. It's just so intriguing.
The LinkedIn stories popped off.
Oh my god!
A moment of silence. Oh my gosh! But also, yeah, I think like they're just gonna fight until the end. I'm not as bullish on TikTok, but can you still hit the if we remove like the whole proof of it, there is proof though that like numbers have been significantly down since I think like end of January. Like I know Brandon, who's was the CSO at Mechanism, like he did a whole like TikTok report based on like their clients and like literally like averages showed like there was just a like X amount percent of decrease across all accounts, which we could assume also based on like external data from like other brands that everyone was seeing the same thing. So not as bullish, but still think like you could still hit if you do it correctly and execute it correctly, you can still have numbers. But my final point for TikTok is also like you don't always also have to like rely on your own account. Like you should be seeing products so that you get the reach of other accounts through the creators and like
that's big. Anytime we get a big creator to post our account, our views are way up, you know.
That's the connection for me. And especially with beverage, since there's only so much that you can do there, it's like I would want to treat anything on our side like in the fun entertaining side, but also like education, like encyclopedia around that product, especially if it's alcohol, because like alcohol on TikTok is like the hardest thing. So that should be like how to garnish a cocktail, not just like drink this. Like, here you go, like young children.
It's gonna be fun and educational on TikTok.
Yeah, it can't just
be,
correct.
Here's my product.
Exactly. And then with shorts, shorts. I started July. June of last year. Originally, my take was like, "What is this? Why? Why are you doing this to us?" And then I posted one, and I was like, "Okay, I'll bite." And at that time, I think it wasn't just Glossier, but that's like the only brand that a lot of people kept referring to, being like Glossier's on YouTube Shorts, like whatever. But to me, they were selling so much, like in their proposition of using shorts, it was just like too salesy. And I think they're good for extra reach, attribution. No. So they're knowing if it's helping anything. Not really.
Are you like, what kind of reach are you seeing there?
I've had some videos. I would say Graz is like the only account. It was the first account that I launched them for. The highest videos at 700,000 views. And when I put it on TikTok, it only got 23,000.
So that was going to be one of my questions. So do you find like same content, like what should brands take away from that? Same content work across each? Should you test it? Same one, or do you have to go into each of the three with a very different strategy?
Similar to you paid folk out there, I love making variants. So I'm all for like testing the same piece of content three times on like more so. I'd rather do it on TikTok and YouTube Shorts. Yeah. Since like Instagram's usually like the most public for like a new perspective. So to test the most, I'll do TikTok and YouTube Shorts. So I am all for like repurposing all previous TikToks onto Shorts to start if I'm starting an account. And then what I'll do is like start reworking like the best TikTok videos with like different hooks that might be more like how someone would search on YouTube now, like how to blank, blah, blah, blah. Like very
focused. What their hooks?
That like all my captions are like very SEO. All my hooks are very SEO. Like it's how to make blank, how to do blah, blah, blah. But also some of like the entertaining, like weird videos do extremely well on Shorts because they just get like the virality factor of like people being like, WTF, what is this? Or like, oh my God, that's so cool.
That nugget of the SEO, like taking the same content, putting an SEO hook on it, that's gold.
Usually, if you go on the Graz account, like I've used the same video like four times, but the one that popped off with 700,000, I changed the hook for and made it like a relatable like POV type of vibe. Yeah. Actually, shout out to Alex again, because if you go on the ZestyZ account, like they're doing this series that I love that's made it more broad but targeted at the same time. It's like it's like POV, your Arab mom made you blank dish,
or
like
so
POV.
Good.
Yeah, it's like amazing. And they're crushing it with that like type of hook. So there's just like fun ways. I told him that yesterday too. It's like this would probably crush on Shorts, like in a heartbeat. But then for maybe just the recipes themselves, like that should be like a how-to, but it shouldn't be like for any recipe, like for Shorts, in my opinion, and for YouTube in general, like no one's like I'm going to make up some random title for a recipe right now. So brace yourself. No one should be like how to make like balsamic glazed chicken thighs with rosemary potatoes. Like no one's getting that granular. Like just write like how to make a perfectly roasted chicken, how to make roasted potatoes,
how to roast chicken.
Literally, just
that's
like...
Probably, that's probably how I would search. How roast chicken?
I brought this up. I think I was talking to Phoebe from Morning Brew this morning. So around like search and like how I think about that too. And like very much... I did the same thing yesterday. Like how I also wrote the tweet. Like Tired is using Google. Wired is using Shorts, Instagram, and TikTok as your search engines. I got a new pair of Hokas last night. And I bought a new style that I don't usually wear, but I wasn't sure when I ordered. I ordered my same size, but the first place I went to was TikTok. And I was like, Clifton 8 versus Arahi 6 Hoka sizing. So that I could hear from someone who runs in them oh yeah, they are supposed to be a little bit more snug. Because any of these websites I'm reading on Google, they're like, reuse the same size. But that's it. Like, I don't know how it's supposed to feel on my foot. Like, blah, blah, blah. So yeah, SEO is the way for shorts for me. But sales, people expect sales, can tell you that. Like, the only, like, measurement tool right now that we have besides the analytics backend on shorts, I think, like, a new thing just dropped I saw from Isaac from Mini Katana was, like, the your viewership stats, like, for each video of where the drop-off is and how many people stayed, finally.
Man.
But, yeah. I mean, I love them.
That's amazing.
But they're so low lift. Like, you should just be on them. Like, it takes literally 2 seconds to put one up.
Yeah, we're starting. We're planning to, like, we have a YouTube channel, but actually start producing long-form YouTube content. And, you know, each show. But we're starting to try to just start with shorts. And I think we were planning on using just TikTok content and see how it did and not expecting much, but just building the muscle of posting. But I think that with, like, taking the hooks and making them a little SEO focused, I think that's a great idea. So I will report back. That's definitely something we're going to try.
Perfect. There you go.
You know what? I love talking to people that are listening to people that are, like, good at social. Because, like, I was listening to a podcast with Isaac the other day, and, like, he's talking about, like, you know, it's like, 80% of the video is the hook, right? Like, that's what all of us ad people talk about. But I think people just have this idea that, like, organic social and paid social are just, like, so different, and obviously there are differences, but there's way more that they have in common that people realize.
So that's a great point of, I think so many people are like, oh, this is only organic usage. My thing, at least for me, I'm so obviously biased and have work, but, like, my goal, given resources, is, like, if I'm creating a piece of content, everyone should be able to use it. So whether that's, like,
okay,
I'm making some type of infographic. Canopy, for example, is a great example of this. Like, I can produce a really cool illustrative graphic with my designer being like, 5 reasons you should use a humidifier, blah, blah, blah. That's super top of funnel. Boost that on the back end. Sweet. Retargeting. And then, like, run it through, make it an email, break it down. Maybe it's an SMS with the graphic. Sweet. Make it an ad. Do whatever you want. And then we could make a video just breaking down the same infographic into a 5 reasons you should use a humidifier short form piece of content. Boom, boom.
Just repurpose it. Yeah. No, I totally agree. We'll use the same. Again, there are definitely subtle and not so subtle differences, but for the majority of the time, especially if you're using B-roll or product stuff or whatever, like, you can reuse so much and try to be more efficient with it.
And I think that's why my other thing is, and this is all love to everyone who works in social, but I would very much say this is, like, a hot take. I don't know. Maybe it's a hot take. To us, it's probably not. But to the grander community or broader community, that, like, the best people who work in social understand performance and brand marketing because you know how to be able to get the most out of the content and for the price and, like, all that stuff, where I think it kind of shows if you just know the brand side, because I don't want to put words in people's mouth, but you know what I mean? It's just like you're thinking so straight lined and, like, not like how can everything work in parallel. It's kind of just like, this partnership sounds cool, like, boom, but, like, where's it helping any of this stuff? Like, everything should somehow be connected, or, like, be able
definitely
to be
agreed.
Leveraged, like a partnership being leveraged by, like, our other resources. Like, can we do email sweeps? Dope. Grow the email list. Like, can we whitelist with this creator? Dope. Like, sweet. Like, yeah. So I think, like, if you're looking for someone for social, you should look for someone with both.
Definitely agreed. Are you ever involved in, like, creator whitelisting discussions, kind of negotiations with, like, your influencer work?
I run it, yeah.
I can kind of share what we do, but I would love to hear from you. Like, what do those conversations usually look like for us? And I would imagine for you, it's like, again, starts with organic seeding, starts with building relationships, see people doing it. But then once you get from there, what do those conversations look like? What do, like, the agreements look like in terms of, like, what's a fair price to pay?
And
all that kind of good stuff.
Such a good question. I still remember the first time I ever got a whitelisting thing for my food account. And you want to know who I called first? Because he's sitting in this office.
Sharma.
It was a contract with Hinge. And it's my favorite partnership that I've ever done. And they were like, we would want a whitelist with you. And I was like, what is this? This is the future. And I said it to Nick. And I was like, can you read this contract? I think it's fake. And it was very much real. And when I saw the results of whitelisting, I was like, oh my God, why aren't more brands doing this? Because like no one was really asking at that. This was years ago. And yeah, I would say now, like through organic seeding, yes, making sure that they're like I said, like warm. And the content that we produce, like maybe it hits a certain pillar that we were hoping to get through someone else that we were going to like pay more for the production plus like ad usage. So someone just automatically was like, I love my canopy so much, like hits on everything that we need. Like that's somewhere where I like might pass it to the team and be like, hey, like I want to try and grab, I'm going to try and grab usage on this.
Yeah,
so usually the flow is like just ask them, be like, hey, do you have a fee if we wanted to use this? If so, what is that? Like for whitelisting, I still am seeing a huge disconnect between whitelisting and like just us using it for paid from the creator standpoint. A lot of people don't know what it is still. So I'll like educate there. I have a one sheeter that explains it, and I always lean into the fact of that I've been through it, and I'm like, it's one of the best decisions I ever made. Like it grew my following by this amount. Got this one's traffic, it's targeted, like you'll see a return from it. Pricing definitely depends right now is what I'm seeing. I'm actually like in, I'm trying to grow a lot of the waitlisting for one client right now. And then also I'm running a new campaign and just sent out scopes and got rates back. Some people are like $1,000 a month, more so like the bigger ones. Some people are still like $200 a month. Like, but I haven't paid anything more than $1,000.
And that's in addition to content. That's just for access to
that's run it. Yeah. So that's literally, yeah, that's like they produce that piece of content that we also have that we want to make sure we whitelist also.
Is anyone charging a percentage of like what you're spending?
I've only had one person ever ask that. Weirdly,
I've done that. I hate that. I'm never doing that again. As much as
I love the creator community, I won't do that. Yeah. It's too much.
I don't like it. It's a pain in the ass.
If you're spending so much money, like, great for them, but, like, that makes no sense to me. Like, I mean, I admire anyone who asks, though. But, yeah, like, I rather just pay the flat fee. Mm-hmm. And, like, if I can, too, like, get a 90-day. If, like, their price is more expensive, I'll be like, cool, then, like, give it to us for 3 months and, like, cut down on the price.
Like, so when you say 1,000, that's in addition to the content, right?
So some cases it's the actual fee for just whitelisting plus the content of or content separately. Sorry. But yeah, I mean like right now what I'm seeing, I'm trying to think off my head, like $500 a month just for whitelisting. And like they want to charge like for a real, like maybe it's like 1,000, but I'm really, like I said, I'm really good at negotiating. So usually I'm very blunt with the numbers that I have to work with. Like, When I started on like any, and they're like, okay, you have this amount of budget for social, cool. I just go with the same lowest number I was going my entire time that I was still doing it. But there's also ways, right? Like we could still include like, hey, like if you lower the fee or like to fit inside our budget, I obviously am in the band camp of like everyone should get paid for their work, but like at the same time we have to make it work for us. So like I can increase your affiliate, like. Let's do that. Or like, you know, whatever it is. I think there's like work.
I haven't thought about that as a negotiation tactic. That's a good one.
I don't do it.
Hey, that's actually our budget. Hey, that's our budget. We can't do that. But what I can do is increase you from 10 to 15%.
I'd rather just be so honest with them because like I don't want to waste my time either going back and forth with, especially with agents. And so, yeah, like I'll usually do for like some of these bigger campaigns. It's usually, especially if they're like huge creators, like are in the Dear Media podcast network, and like they obviously are dealing with like huge managers, like who work at like DBA and whatever, where like the prices are like so inflated. All love though. I'll like be like, okay, cool, like 10 to 15% or even 20, depending on the product, and just run it like that. But I'm so selective.
Now I hear you. It makes sense. I have a story for you. Last week, we were getting some usage rights for social. It was something we already had rights for, but it expired, so we're trying to extend them a little bit. think it was like $500 or $650. And the creator had an agent who then had to get the legal team involved for a $500 contract, and they had all these scratch-offs. I'm like, I guarantee you're spending more on your legal team fees than we're even paying you for this content.
None of it makes sense. Some of the people that you're like, you don't have a manager, have managers. And I'm just like, okay. I don't know. It's the most intriguing world right now. And I think a lot of that is like, I don't want to say I'm excited because I'm not excited, but I'm intrigued to see the shift of like, knock on wood, of like, however the world goes right now from an economy standpoint, how influencers' rates are going to be affected. I'm seeing like decreases because they rather have a higher volume of work. And then that makes them more accessible to brands if they're severely decreasing their pricing. Versus where some are just like going, like, I want big packages only.
There's a very good amount of that. They'll just kind of, sometimes people will, obviously some people will charge a low amount, some people charge, you know, they know what the market is, but then a certain amount of them will just say a number that they just want, and it's sometimes so ridiculous to me. Then we've been like, oh, sorry, it's under our budget. And they're like, oh, well, what is your budget? Like, I'll make it work.
So funny you say that. I obviously am not going to say who it is, but I've gotten in the last 3 weeks, I got someone down from, you're going to die, $35,000 for a bigger scope, right? It was like usage, some exclusivity, a real whatever. And I like cut the scope down to still just like a real usage and exclusivity, which exclusivity, you know, tagged on a lot. And then you should side. And I was like, cool, just give me the one video because we're going to whitelist this anyway. So like the fluff, the stories and stuff I don't need, we can run the reel as a story. I got it down to 4,000.
Oh, that's pretty good. I was going to say, we just went from 35K to 14 on somebody, but 4 is really good. That's insane though.
Okay, that's a better flex.
No. You went from 30 to 14,000.
Oh, I thought you said.
Yeah, 14,000.
Oh my God.
$14.
Oh, $1,400.
I don't want any. $1,400. Oh, no. $14,000.
I was like, wait.
No.
But that's the thing. That was me being honest. That was me being like, this is literally the budget I had. I was like, I literally only had like $10,000. So I was like, hey, like I had already been like, I can only pay ideally like people like $300 to $3,500. And if I want to round up to 12, like 4. But like, I was like, this is all they got. So I was like, people can't be flopping like this because you're ruining like your own like perception of like the content that you wanted to charge originally. I don't know. I think rates are just going to be so interesting to me. But that's why I'd rather just start whitelisting more. Honestly, if the brand knows it's working and people are creating the content that we want to see, like I'd rather just keep doing that.
Yeah, I'm so bad at it, especially with like how much we spend. I just never know how much what is like fair for whitelisting. I feel like I have a good handle on content, but like it's worth it if you're spending, you know, 5 to 6 figures like a month on something. Like it's very worth it if it performs better.
Yeah, I mean, like I would say like a good ballpark, at least to me, is like we know we're going to make our money back on them more or less. Yeah. So it's like I would say anywhere from like $250 to $700 is pretty fair. Depending on the creator, we've got
one person we're paying $2,000 a month for, but they're like a pretty big creator and they just happen to convert and sell really well. So
we're of these smaller creators. Yeah, we're of these smaller creators, and also because like, not saying, it's always hard talking about creators because I don't want to sound like I'm trying to take advantage of creators at the same time, and I know no one thinks that. But anyway, just the idea of like a lot of these smaller creators like want to get their foot in the door, so it's like, if they're creating the content, and a lot of them are really good. So it's like, yeah, of course I'm going to ask them to whitelist, but that's where it's like, they'd rather have the traffic than charge for us for that. They'd rather have more followers than charge us. So that's probably where there's like more ease, but all respect to the creator community.
I hear you. This has been awesome. Eli, do you have any other questions?
No questions. Just want to make sure you have an opportunity to plug your flexible foodie account and the rest of your accounts and all the fun stuff.
How much do you charge for whitelisting if anybody wants a whitelist through you?
Oh my God, I don't even know anymore. I haven't really posted on my account. I think I've posted 4 times in the last 2 years, so probably like $1. Yes. So getting those rand deals to be, but yeah, you can follow me on Instagram if you like good food and working out brands and stuff like that. It's at the Flexible Foodie, or my personal is at Kendall Mary. Twitter, I like tweeting things about social, is at Flexible Foodie because I can't get it switched to my name. And yeah, that's where I'm at pretty much. And then if anyone wants to learn more about social in general, has any questions, you can put an inquiry through my website at kendalldickinson.com.
Namaste.
Awesome. Well, yeah, thank you so much for having on. This was a ton of fun.
This is great. I love this. Thanks for having me.